Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup for Wednesday, November 25th, Thanksgiving edition. And today we're on the roundup, as we do each week, we're going to take a look at three questions we've been hearing from international educators over the last few days, and particularly in the wake of IEW last week and some of the news reports that have come out with an analysis of the numbers of international students, and also some predictions for what a Biden administration would look like for international education. We'll also broaden the scope a little bit, and as we always like to say here on the roundup, is give some perspective, some global perspective to what's going on with how things are shaping up, particularly in light of COVID-19 and the ongoing impacts international higher ed is suffering as a result. So before we do, we want to give a special shout out to those watching live here on Facebook. It's always a pleasure to have you a part of the regular conversation each week and get your feedback and input on some of the concerns and questions that we deal with each week. To those that are watching on repeat on YouTube or Facebook, good to have you along as well for the journey. And a special shout out to those who are downloading us each week for podcast listening and making us a regular part of your routine. So thanks again for being here. And as we for many institutions, the fall semester has ended, at least in person has ended this fall. And many colleges, if they haven't finished this semester this week for Thanksgiving, they've gone online for the remainder of the term, encouraging students not to go home yet if they were planning to return for the remainder of the semester if it wasn't ending. Some colleges doing testing, exit testing, for like at Notre Dame. They finished their fall term right before Thanksgiving, and they had exit testing to make sure students weren't going home who were currently positive for COVID-19. So an extraordinary change in the way the holidays are going to shape up for everybody here. And for those that have been hunkering down for the last 8-9 months, it looks like there's a couple more months of where we would normally be having incredible family time and holiday experiences that are going to get severely scaled back. And we're with you here at SMIE Consulting, and just hope that the holidays treat you well and that you get a chance to relax and recuperate and recharge your batteries for what will be an interesting 2021. Can't get much worse, right? But let's get right to it with the questions of the week. First up, what do the recent student numbers mean that we received last week? And as we shared on our newsletter on Monday morning with the SMIE, all the SMIE news fit to share, e-newsletter, that comes out Mondays at 9 a.m. Eastern, has a few social media stories, 20 to 30 international ed stories, and oftentimes where those two overlap. And we focus on three of those questions here on the roundup on Wednesdays. But a lot of the analysis in the newsletter this past on Monday was related to the number, very different reports that we got out last week. There was the traditional open doors data, that is the year behind look at what happened in 1920 in the academic year, primarily with the fall numbers of fall 19. Then there was the fall snapshot survey that IIE put out that looked at 700 institutions and their numbers for this current fall term, both new and returning, to get overall numbers in terms of the decreases that they were experiencing. You also saw the high school report or secondary school report that IIE did with AIFS to look at both exchange high school students that are here just for a year that are attending public schools, and then high school diploma seekers that are the greater majority of high school students from overseas in the U.S. currently. Their report on the 2019 year also came out. And then you had probably the report I look to most closely for the current state of affairs for international students or in the United States, and that's a CVIS by the Numbers report. The report was released last week, but it reflects data through September, the end of the fiscal year. It's supposed to be a quarterly edition, but over the last 3 years, it's been anything but quarterly. There was a period from March of 19 to January of 2020 before we had we only had those two, nothing in between. So clearly this was timed to the end of the fiscal year, and it reveals probably what new open doors will reflect next year, a fairly substantial decline in student enrollments overall. And we'll kind of put all these numbers in perspective here with this first question. First, you had the IIE numbers, the open doors numbers that reflected the 1.8% decline in overall numbers for the 2019-2020 academic year, a 0.6% decrease in the number of new international students that enrolled in fall 2019. So that was actually the lowest rate over the last 4 years of decreases in new international students. It slowed from 0.8 to 0.6 from 2018-19 to 2019-20. So that there was a decrease in the rate of new student enrollment declines. That's about the best way you can say that. There were for all but seven of the top 20 countries from the Fast Facts report, from Open Doors, all but seven had declines in numbers. The surprises on that top 20 list of increases, you saw Taiwan have an increase for the first time in several years, and that's Taiwan is still at number seven overall on the list, but they had healthy in this day and age, a 1.5% increase in 2019-20. You also saw Bangladesh see a substantial increase. No one really had double-digit increases in, and no surprise there, in terms of new students or total students enrolled in the U.S. in 2019-20. So the fall international snapshot is really where you see the most significant negative numbers that we saw last week. That was reflected in 700 institutions that responded to the IIE and other association survey that captured numbers that reflected for new international students this fall 2020. Of those 700 institutions, they saw a 43% drop in their international students, new international students enrolled this fall. Overall, those campuses saw around a 16% overall decline in their international student numbers. And that mirrors fairly closely the National Student Research Center data that we've been reporting on for the last few weeks that showed anywhere from 7% for undergrads to, 14% for undergrads to 7-8% for graduates. So to combine around 16% overall from the National Student Clearinghouse data. And this certainly fall snapshot from IIE reflects similar numbers in terms of a 16% overall decline. And the high school numbers are also similar declines from, again, a year ago data. It's actually probably a little bit more. I think it was 15 or 16% as well in declines in students seeking high school programs. An interesting article from University World News that kind of summarizes a lot of these kind of numbers to try and get your head around. And that's the third straight year of international declines, about 20,000 down over the previous year, 5.5%. International students still comprise about 5.5% of the total student population. So this is interesting data that we're seeing here. Interesting numbers if you're tracking this. IIE's Open Doors had more than 2,900 institutions respond their institutional data. So there are others that are out there that receive international students that do not report, at least post-secondary numbers that are captured in that IIE report. There also we see a lot of the first time we saw NAFSA's economic impact statement for international students was an actual drop of over $3 billion year on year from 2019-20 to from 2018-19. So we see economically, country is obviously taking a hit. Our campuses are taking a hit. Our communities where these institutions are located that these students would have attended are certainly taking a hit. So no surprise there, but the context is important here that in the U.S., and this is something that we always talk about, we'll get to Australia at the end here, as to the magnitude of the impact COVID-19 has had on their international student populations. But you see here that Australia is are bracing for losses of about $3.3 billion. And put that in context, that was slightly more than what we experienced here did experience in the previous year. But that's all still to come in terms of what the final numbers will be. But the numbers that really, as I mentioned earlier, that really get me going is the Stevis study by the Stevis by the numbers reports. And as far as government reports go, it's probably the least user-friendly format that you can imagine. Just a massive spreadsheet that you have to scroll over to find any data, because it's got it broken down by each country, by each state, and each level of students that we have in the U.S. So there's a lot of data to be mined from that report. It's just not in a usable format. You basically have to copy and paste over to Excel and then manipulate it to your heart's content. But what the numbers do show is for the actual number of international students in the United States as of the end of September, the numbers have dropped 21% overall from January this year. So from January to September, it was a 21% drop. And in real numbers, that's over 240,000 students fewer studying in the United States from January to now here in at the end of September, end of the fiscal year for DHS. So that's a 21% decrease from 1,146,000 to a little over 905,000. So 240,000 fewer international students. And these are just F&M students. It doesn't include exchange visitors, which are another couple hundred thousand. It may not be that much, actually, now that I'm remembering, because we don't see that breakdown on IIE's report at all, because it's a kind of a combined FMJ and other visa statuses. So what we're seeing is significant drop-offs. Where was the decline most significant? IEPs were down 43% in that period from January to September. That's from 57,000, just under over 57,000, almost 58,000 to 32,000. So a drop of over 25,000 students fewer studying in intensive English programs in the past 9 months. You look at high schools down 38%, and those are primarily the degree-seeking students, down about 18,000 in net numbers. For associate degrees, down 22%, bachelor's down 20%, master's down 20%, and PhD saw the smallest decrease, only down 4%, from 161,000 to 154,000. So those are the real numbers that we're looking at for degree-seeking students enrolled currently at all levels, intensive English, associate, high school, bachelor's, master's, PhD. So for the core of what our institutions are concerned about. So those bottom three categories, the U.S.-based international students, you're looking at numbers that dropped anywhere from, 15,000, 18,000, and 25,000 fewer. So well over 70,000 fewer international students in the U.S. at either associates, high school, or IEPs. So that is a particular drop, significant drop in numbers for those demographics that used to be a fairly robust part of what U.S. colleges had to go after. So that market's changing. Obviously, and we talked about this last week as to the reason why there are this many fewer students. Yes, pandemic has impacted this significantly. Yes, Trump's policies, but to a much lesser extent, are impacting the declines, because we look at the new international student numbers from last year actually dropping to the smallest decrease during the Trump years of 0.6%. So wasn't as significant a drop off last year, basically flat. Where you see the 43% fewer in from the snapshot survey, 21% overall from the Cevis by the Numbers report. A lot of that is going to be the new students that either couldn't get into the country because by law, or by immigration regulations by DHS, because they were, if their campuses were fully online, they were not going to be able to come. So they are not included in these numbers because they weren't able to establish their status, their F1 status. Though the IIE snapshot report does include 20% of those new international students that did enroll or are actually still at home in their home country doing classes online. So there are differences, a little bit apples and oranges in terms of the kinds of students we're talking about, but the clear indication is from the CBIS by the numbers report that a 20%, 21% drop in our international student population is occurred between January and September, obviously the peak months of the pandemic between March and we're still in the middle of it. But and what that has meant is that significant of a drop. It's not just Trump's policies. It is mostly the pandemic and the impacts of the pandemic on what we've been able to do in the United States. And that's what we look at with this report, is that you see, talked about last week how 70% of U.S. consulates and embassies are still closed and not open for business for regular student visa interviews. Those that are open for emergency appointments only, there's two in China that are open for emergency appointments, maybe three. You can only apply, you can only take advantage of that within 15 days of the start date of your program if you're an international student with a valid I-20. So those that are looking to maybe start in January can't take advantage of that until late December, early January, depending on when their start date is. So that's a significant concern, is that when you have all these consulates and embassies still closed, the only real option in 70% of the world where international students could go for visa appointments is to do online education. And that is something that students are willing to do for a semester. Then we shared some of the IDP data last week, IDP Connect data, that showed that students are willing to make some sacrifices if it's going to mean they can have face-to-face education, in-person education, at least the educational experience. That's something that the UK has done for in-person living experiences, and that they kept their borders open. They put most of their all the universities went fully online, at least for their instruction for the lectures. But they've reduced it to reduce their the in-person interactions. It's much more easier to do that in a UK system where in undergraduate and graduate education, everybody's in with academic pods. You don't have students taking subjects across a range of academic areas. It's all, if you're a history student, you're taking history classes with the same group of students. So it's easier to put those students into a bubble, into your kind of academic bubble, so to speak, in the UK. In the US, that's not really possible, but the US and UK are the ones that kept their borders open the most of all the major destinations for international students. Canada, Australia, New Zealand have all had significant restrictions. China, another major destination, they're not letting students back in to study yet who already enrolled. Certainly new students aren't able to get in either. So there's been some real challenges, not just for the United States. This is a global pandemic, and it's affecting every country, some more than others. So the perspective is what we'll talk about and give the example of Australia in a little bit. But the CBIS by the numbers data certainly reflects the very real drops that we've had. And as we talked about last week, they are down primarily to the lack of a visa of appointment availability at 70% of all consulates and embassies around the world that the U.S. has in operation. So the question is next, given this very different milieu that we find ourselves in than we did a year ago, and with the news of the election, and the GSA has started the process for the transition team, and looks like all the legal cases are going to be falling away very soon from the Trump administration's challenges to the legitimacy of the election. And that's going to lead to a very different administration, obviously, in January 20th, 2021. And what does that look like? There's been a lot of debate as to what's going to be included in a Biden administration when it comes to immigration policy, international ed policy. A Forbes article by Stuart Anderson at the National Foundation for American Policy has outlined a few of the major highlights, and I'm certainly in agreement with many of these as to ones that they will be targeted. First is the rescind the proposal by the Trump administration that we've talked about several times here on the roundup to eliminate duration of status. That would put limits up 2 to 4 years depending on where a student was coming from and what they were studying, what level they were studying. Hopefully getting rid of that. Rescinding the new Department of Labor rule to inflate salaries for H-1Bs by 40% or more. That would basically eliminate kind of the entry-level student, international student coming off OPT that might want to continue working after a full year or three of work experience. There are other H-1Bs that proposals that would get rid of the H-1B lottery and make it award H-1Bs to those with the highest salaries. Again, limiting those job opportunities in areas of the country that might have lower standards of or quality of life, not quality of life, standards of living, cost of living, that would have normally lower salaries. Stuart Anderson has also put in here something that's, I think, a little bit of a dream scenario, and that's developing a national strategy for recruiting international students, coordinating State Department visa policy with regard to F visas, because right now it's a non-immigrant visa, to making it a dual intent visa. And by doing that, if that happened, that would certainly signal a very different shift, a very significant shift in immigration policy in the United States that would provide the student that does want to come here and work the opportunity to not have to make up something in their visa interview to satisfy a consul officer that is making a decision whether that student has immigrant intent or not. And that's something that is, I think, would be hugely impactful if that were to happen. I think that's a little bit of a stretch, because that's a very significant change. And to have a national strategy for international ed, and particularly student recruitment, would be an amazing shift, and a welcome shift, I think, for international educators around the country. But it looks like that, but it certainly addresses a question that we in the business know that the majority of students want that option to potentially work after graduation, the post-study work opportunity. It's been a significant boon for the UK since they reintroduced their two-year study post-study work visa for Australia. It's been in New Zealand. Those kind of pathways for student to work after graduation is significant, and we all know what is happening in Canada and how very clear those pathways are, and that's the study permits that they have in Canada can easily be seen as a pathway to work, to permanent residency and to citizenship. So that is significant. That's not an exhaustive list that Stuart covers in his article here in Forbes, but it does cover, I think, the important nuts and bolts of what you can expect to change. There's other things that we talked about before. I mentioned a few in a presentation I gave last week during International Ed Week that I'll share the link out next week in the roundup and in the newsletter. So that you can see what we're talking about here and some of our thoughts on the matter. But let's shift gears in the last question here to get to that global perspective we were talking about. How bad will it get for Australia's universities? Now, we have a lot of international educators in the U.S. This summer, rightly so, in July when DHS proposed their ban on returning students who were going to be either in hybrid or online classes at their institutions, so students who maybe went home right when the pandemic started, who were looking to come back to campus this fall. When that proposal was floated out 1 week and then rescinded less than 2 weeks later, that was actually something that was that what the U.S. did by allowing returning students to come in and take their classes online and or hybrid versions. That coming in was actually outside of the UK probably the most open policy that any of the major destination countries had towards international students by allowing that to happen. What DHS was proposing, that if your campus is, whether new or returning, we know that new students could not come in if their campuses were going to be fully online. They could if they were hybrid, which was what was allowed in the spring. But for new students and returning students in Canada, they have not been able to come back into the country if their campus did not require them to be on campus, if their college did not require it, physical presence in Canada. There's a whole other set of issues with Canada that we shared in the newsletter about them not being, the majority of campuses in Canada have not gotten their readiness plans, which everyone had to file in order to be allowed to take international students in again, how they were going to handle that, handle the pandemic there, with testing and protocols in place and that type of thing. So that was a federal policy in Canada. But in Australia and New Zealand, Southern Hemisphere leaders there, both have had borders shut since February, end of February, beginning of March. And what that did, that was right at the beginning of their academic year there, they've had basically no new international students able to physically enter the country to enroll. To give you just a sense of the numbers, in 2019, there were more than 758,000 visa-holding international students were studying in Australia. Now, this is includes not only post-secondary higher ed degree-seeking bachelor's, master's, doctoral students, but also vocational students. That 758,000 number is quite a bit more than you might have thought, but that's the number that is, the ICIF has in their ICIF Monitor article. And this year, there are approximately 210,000 fewer international students due to COVID-related restrictions for entry. So that's a very significant drop, close to over 25% drop in their numbers, closer to 30% drop just in physical bodies in the country. That's the Department of Home Affairs that does student visas, that's our kind of State Department, so to speak, they show an 80 to 90% decrease in study visa applications for Australia this year. Again, because students have been able to get into the country to begin study. So that's a very significant drop there. And we know, and we've highlighted that this many times here on the Roundup before, that Australia sees international ed at all levels as a business, as it's actually their third largest service export industry in the country. And that is a multi-billion dollar a year boon to the Australian economy that has been basically shut off completely, other than those that stayed in country. And that's the 547,000 students that stayed in the country that were already enrolled in Australian higher ed institutions. So they enrolled them. They had a much lower number, only about 70% instead of 90% that we had in the U.S. actually stay physically in the country. So there had been a growth upward trend in visas to Australia in 2019, but again, that's all been erased and reversed in the course of 2020. Where you see China and India had also seen upticks, Nepal had seen an uptick. Brazil and Vietnam round out the top five sending countries to Australia. They accounted for 60% of all foreign students in the country. Those five countries, China, India, by far over 50%. And then Nepal, Brazil, and Vietnam rounded out that other 7% or so. So Australia is taking a big hit. The impact is, according to a Pi News article, which we shared the link to here, is looking at about 50% fewer international students if the entry bans and the travel bans continue through the mid part of 2021. And that is, by all indications from Prime Minister just this past week in Australia, did say that we'd like to have international students back in right now, we can't do it. And so the ban on travel ban for students returning is still in place and looks continue to be in place into 2021. So Australian institutions certainly going to be hit hard in the coming months, and we'll be looking for a quick rebound. And as we thought about, and some of the educators last week were talking during IEW, that there will be pent-up demand, that there will be students have been waiting to defer their plans. We saw 40,000 students that are part of that 700 IIE fall snapshot survey that had 40,000 students that were deferred for this year. So that, there's pent-up demand right there, and who knows what where students that are looking to go somewhere that does have open borders and are able to make the transition to education in person, what that will bode for the coming year. So we'll see what happens, but we'll keep our fingers on the pulse here at the Roundup and look forward to having future conversations with you on this issue and more. Have a great weekend and happy Thanksgiving, everyone in the U.S. Cheers.